Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow, Met, fellow adventurers, we are back with Sir Croakington, and it's just time to meet the seer as we continue the Proven Grounds Part 6, The Elder Throne. This will be the 15th scenario, or at least I think so. A seer in shadow. Begin. At the conclusion of the previous part, as you step through the arch and into the shadowy passage, you bump into two masked men moving about in the dark tunnel. You instinctively apologise, and one of the men nods in response, slapping you on the shoulder as he passes. The other, taller than the first, his eyes intently fixed on you, seems about to speak, but suddenly turns and continues into the room. You turn back at him, but are quickly forced to return your attention to the tunnel you're entering, as you hurry to keep up with Gormwick. Not for the first or last time, your thoughts drift away, fluttering far away from the dark passages, the ragged, desperate men, and the fire and death that has served as your disheartening first glimpses of Cardson. Images of Cardson Isle, the stark silhouette of his imposing keep, of the sinister, masked face of the Thane, those fortresses become, of the star-filled sky that herald the outset of your long and perilous mission, all pass through your thoughts in the blink of an eye. Your mind returns to the present as you move up to the side of your silent companion. You hope the seer, of which Ombrek has spoken so highly, will at last be able to make plain what those of Thustar only hinted at. Perhaps then you'll be able to align both your heart and your mind with the struggle, the outcome of which you're beginning to think of severe and lasting consequences far beyond the walls of the Sorcerer Lord's city. And now, you pass swiftly through a twisting maze of dark tunnels, following Ombrek closely as he adeptly navigates the labyrinth of passages that run deep beneath the streets of Cardson. Okay, I'm guessing Cardson, like many long-settled cities, is built on an older city, which 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 is built on an older city. And often, they don't knock it down or clear it away. You just pile rubble or pile some made ground up, build higher. Of course, probably the most clear example of this is the town of Chattahewick from 10,000 or so years ago, somewhere in the Middle East. I'm not sure exactly where, maybe Turkey, maybe Iraq, maybe Syria. Fertile Crescent, anyway. Anyway, where they started a village, and then when their house didn't work anymore, they built a new house exactly on top of the old house. Exactly. Same shape and plan, just higher up. And they kept doing this over and over and over again for more than 1,000 years. So, Chattel Huick, the clearest example of this, there's now a hill of the town. The town wasn't built on a hill. The town was built on the town until it became a hill. Yeah, so of course you get that in pretty much any long settled city. If you're willing to dig things out, there will be passages you can go in. And of course, these people are very willing to dig things out. And of course, there's basements and sewers and secret tunnels and even more secret tunnels. Lots of secret tunnels. Underpasses and lots of other places where there'll be lots of interesting things below the city, much of which gets forgotten. Like in London, for example, there still is a British Museum tube station. It's not in use anymore, but it's there. Now and again, the self-proclaimed leader of the Wabble pauses, and the two of you strain your ears for any sign of movement in the tunnels that surround you. These tunnels have been our lifeblood, he whispers to you during one such pause. Of course, now that they are known to our enemy, at least in part, we'll need to make haste and make use of them before they become death traps. For good or ill, Sir Crokington, this will all be over soon. Omlek waves his hand, signalling that the two of you are to continue at once. With that, you set off at the heels of the man, upon whose guidance you are now completely reliant. After nearly an hour, having passed through several collapsed sections of tunnel, made your way along narrow ledges that skirted pools of deep, murky water. I know, maybe just the ground collapsed into a deeper basement. You arrive at the threshold of a dry, broad corridor. The new passage slopes downward for nearly 36 yards and ends at a towering stone arch. Dense gloom fills the void beneath the ornate stone gate. Olmrek stops before setting foot in the passage and turns to you. She's down there, a chamber just beyond that arch, she says. She's guarded by her own. I'd only warn you to mind yourself. Her cause is not ours, as I've been told. But we seek the same end, more or less. I will not go down there with you, Sir Crokington, for my presence isn't likely to be helpful. I know little more about this business than my own small part in our struggle. It's in your hands now. Show her those journals, and may we place faith in that which the owl has entrusted to you. Omlek nods and waves his hand at the dark arch at the far end of the sloping corridor. He tells you that he will wait here for you. Without word, you return his nod and start down the passage. Increasingly confident with each step taken, you're drawing nearer to the conclusion of a long and perilous affair. About time. This is episode 12, so it's been a long one. As you draw up to the arch, you note that it marks the threshold of another sloping passage. You step under the arch and make your way along the new corridor in the dark until, at only a few dozen yards, the hall ends at a wooden door. Thick bands of iron cross the damp timbers, reinforcing a barrier that, in your estimation, was only recently erected. Curious. Suddenly, the door swings inward, and you find yourself confronted by a tall, unshaven, chain-clad man. his hand gripping the hilt of a sword sheathed at his side. The dark-haired, middle-aged man looks over you for several moments before moving to his side, motioning for you to enter. Without exchanging a single word with him, you hop through the open door and into the empty chamber. The room lit only by the flickering glow of a single lamp dangling from a peg that protrudes from the far wall. The moment you step into the chamber, the door behind you closes. You turn and find the chain-clad man standing in front of the lonely exit, his one hand resting on his hip, and the other clasping the hilt of his sword. Before you can begin to contemplate his sudden and strange turn of events, a soft, feminine voice from somewhere in the chamber welcomed you by name. "This is not the first time we've met," says the voice, "for I pray it will be the last. Time has drawn short, and our enemies draw near." As you turn away from the armored man, you're stunned to find a wooden table and four chairs in the center of the previously empty chamber. Sitting on the opposite side of the table, directly facing you, is a young woman. Your heart nearly skips a beat as you immediately recognize the face staring at you out of the gloom. It's the face of the sorceress you previously met atop the smoking hill in the jagged hills of Sarngard Isle. Now that was a long, long time ago. Maybe I'll link to the episode, maybe I won't. Depends on whether I remember or not. The young woman smiles and offers you a chair. "I see you haven't forgotten," she says, "for it is unlikely you recall this chamber, despite the fact you've been here before. On your last visit, you died right over there, in the corner next to the door." Oh, wait. Oh my. This is some sort of wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey stuff. Is the time crab involved? The words of the sorceress send your mind reeling. You immediately ask her what she's talking about. "What do you recall of our first meetings?" he asks, ignoring your inquiries. "There are no more mysteries, Sir Crokerton. All will be made plain to you, here, in this chamber, as it has been done before. I must know what you remember." Struggling to retain the clarity of your thoughts, you recall your first encounter with the sorceress at the summit of the smoking hill in Sarngard Isle. You clearly recall your first encounter with the sorceress, following a long and strenuous climb up a narrow track that skirts the edge of the hill, you find yourself standing on its broad, flat, rocky summit, in the middle of a small wing of trees. Not far from the northern side of the hilltop stands a weathered hide tent. Several pieces of burning wood scattered across the top of the hill send thin columns of smoke trailing into the air. You've been studying the tent for only a few seconds when its worn flap is suddenly thrown back and a tall, slender woman, clad in a combination of green cloth and fur, steps out. The woman, whose delicate, youthful countenance, similarly odd with the wugginess of her chosen abode, bows deeply. The pulse quickens when you realise this is the woman whose face appeared to you on the surface of the stone disc. "At last you have arrived," she says, leaning much of her weight against the garled wooden staff that stabs into the ground at her feet. "It is fate that has brought you to this isle, and into this hilt, and indeed to the very doorstep of my dwelling." The mention of your real name by this woman alarms you, before you can ask her how she came to know it. However, she again speaks, answering your question before you can even attempt to voice it. "I've been called the Sorceress in the Hills, and even the Sorceress of Sarngard," he says, and you find yourself being captivated by a soothing gaze. "Neither of those names suits me, and indeed I know of none that does, though I suppose I might just be a sorceress after all. But such things are of little consequence. What matters is that the events I've long known would unfold have been set into motion, and even now have begun to spin towards their conclusion. As she finishes speaking, the pale shadows fall over you, and you instinctively turn your eyes skyward. You continue to recall your first encounter with the sorceress. Two large hawks, their black-tipped wings spread out wide against the deep blue sky, soaring and land on the woman's shoulders. The majestic birds focus their fierce eyes upon you as they regard your presence on the hilltop as an intrusion. As if they regard you. You've come to me seeking answers, she says. I will help you as best as I can. You found me not a moment too soon, Sir Crookington, for you and your allies are in great danger. Danger that grows with each passing day. You ask the sorceress who she refers to when she speaks of your allies, and what the source of peril is that threatens you. Do not look to know more than you can yet hope to, she says, the tone and demeanor softening. You will know your true friends in your hour of need. You have certainly already guessed at the source of the danger of which I speak. Your judgment is thus far to be praised. But sound thinking alone will not keep you out of the jaws of your enemies. You boldly ask the sorceress if she's connected with the etched stones you discovered on the island. She smiles and nods. Continue to recall your first encounter with the sorceress. There's a great secret hidden on this isle, she says, as the hawks perched upon her subtly taints the air before quickly lighting on her shoulders again. It's a secret that was hidden here long before men took any interest in the treasures to be found in the depths of Sarngard. You ask the sorceress if the secret is in any way related to the fragments of raven bone you discovered in your exploration of the isles. She slowly shakes her head. She tells you that while raven bone is connected with it, it is only incidental to the core of the secret that's long rested in obscurity on the treacherous shores of the isle. You're on a path that is destined to collide with the very heart of this secret, she says, her voice suddenly adopting a grave tone. You will face peril far greater than that which you thus far confronted, far greater than perhaps any you have known. Before this matter is put to rest and all is set right. Before you can ask her several of the questions that linger on the tip of your tongue, the sorceress hands you a small platinum coin. There were six others like it, she says, answering your next question, before you even had a chance to pose it. Return to me when you possess all seven, and I will provide you with what you need. Only when you hold all seven of the coins will you stand at the threshold of a great secret and under the shadow of the very real and imminent peril. How many of those coins do I have now? Only five. Oh dear. Am I going to have to go on a quest to find the next two? You ask the sorceress who she is and how she has come to know about the purported secret of which she has spoken. Do you not recognize me? She says, smiling. Am I now so different? No, I would not expect you to know my face. Yes, or remember my voice. It's another time and place. Chapter now closed forever. Oh my. There's just a little hint of the time shenanigans that seem to be coming up. You continue to recall your first encounter with the sorceress. You ask the sorceress about the significance of the etched stones you discovered, holding out one of them for her to look at. She glances at the stone for a moment and then nods, bringing up her eyes to meet your questioning gaze. They shall serve their purpose soon enough, she says, a sulky voice adopting a reassuring tone. The end of the days that lie ahead, their use shall be made known. And you will be thankful to have dutifully kept all that will come into your possession. Without warning, the sorceress pauses and leans heavy on her guard's staff, as if overcome by weakness. You are at that moment struck by a notion that she certainly seems alone and vulnerable in the wild, this wild and inhospitable region of the Isle. You ask her why it is that she hasn't sought refuge in the human-controlled area, and tell her you'll be glad to lead her back to the keep. You are kind, but you must remember that nothing on these shores is what it seems. I am no danger here. That does not mean peril doesn't surround us. As we may plain to you, Sir Grokington, you are hope closer to the heart of the masses before you than you could ever realise. You are about to speak again when the sorceress holds up her hand, tells you she is tired. I'm afraid I need just a bit more rest, she says, casting her eyes skyward, before turning and stepping back towards her tent. You must return here again when you have all 7 coins. You must not delay. I guess I didn't delay. Sir Crokington didn't delay. It's probably only been a few weeks since that meeting as far as she's concerned. But me as the player? I've delayed a lot. It's been 1-2 years since then. You continue to recall your first encounter with the sorceress. The sorceress bids you farewell and retreats to her tent, leaving you alone on top of the hill. You take one last look around at the rugged, unforgiving environment in which you made a home, before beginning your descent along the narrow, winding track that will take you back to the base of the towering peak. When you reach the foot of the hill, you glance back at the summit, far above. There, in stark contrast with the pale blue sky, the dark silhouettes of 2 circling, broad-winged hawks. Taking a few moments to rest your legs, you once again set off on your exploration of the jagged hills. We're a long way from the top of that hill, the young woman says, as she drums her fingers against the edge of the table. Further still are we from the beginning of all this. An age or so, if my memory serves me. I am the seer they told you about, Sir Crokington. But your friends, this rabble, they know little about the affair in which we find ourselves entangled. They seek only to overthrow the Grand Sentry. Yet he is little more than a single soldier in a vast army. An army that has spread itself across the breadth of time. Whoa. Things have just escalated. You demand the seer identify herself and speak plainly. We'll ask her what she meant by, you've been here before on your last visit. You died right over there in the corner next to the door. She nods once. My name, though is of little importance, is Calawath. You and I have met at this critical juncture of place and time on 7 previous occasions, he says. I hope for our cause, the entirety of which you're about to realise, that this will be our last meeting. By the power I yet retain the ability to wield, you have travelled through time on 6 occasions to counter the evolving strategy of a foe that warps time to suit its will, to serve purpose that serves no living thing. You've made mistakes, Sir Crokington, so have we. But at this juncture, it's a precise joining of space and time. Those mistakes have been corrected, and our path to victory over a nameless but still vastly powerful enemy at last takes shape. No, actually, we travel through time on 7 occasions. The 6 the 6 that we know about, and the 7th one, because of my incredible stupidity. What, 2 episodes back? Or was it 3? Maybe 3 episodes back. Anyway, the one where all hope is lost because of villainy and stupidity. That one. She had to make another correction for that. And in fact, that she then spends quite a while quite a while laying into me about this, and it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. But fortunately, it's not written down, so you don't have to know about it. And I don't have to say it, read it. But it did happen. It did happen. She did absolutely whip into us for dying when we're explicitly told, if you do this, you will die. But she managed to fix that. Sorry about that. Caliph pauses, as if expecting you to react to what she has just told you. Realizing you would learn more by allowing her to speak, you refrain from voicing your questions now brewing your mind. She promptly continues. The enemy is nameless, she says. And yet it's assumed thousands of names on thousands of different worlds. Worlds like yours. We suspect its motives are deeper than we might hope to guess. Its purpose is not our concern. The enemy achieves its mysterious ends through the bending of time. The destruction of those realities. As threads of time and place that threaten its conquest. This world, your world, is one of the threads our enemy is determined to expunge. You ask Carlef if defeating the Grand Century is the victory she mentioned moments ago. She nods, but quickly holds up her finger. The one known to you as the Grand Century is but a single agent of the enemy. He is an unwitting accomplice, for he remains perhaps the most powerful of the enemy's agents I've yet to encounter. Defeating him will forever remove the threat facing your world. But our victory against the Grand Century is achieved elsewhere, another time, another place. The agent of our enemy must be defeated before he is allowed to assume his destiny. Ooh, time travel! You ask her why it is the nameless enemy seeks to destroy this time and place. And if your foe possesses the ability to bend time to its will, why has it not yet been able to effect such destruction? Our enemy is not alone. His ability to warp time, she says, smiling. I am one of a group of seven that has long battled this evil, Sir Crokington. We seek to preserve the natural course of time, devoid of the sinister manipulations of an entity whose power and determination we have thus far been able to match. It must be known, though, that I fear our ability to do so is waning. We are the reason the enemy is yet to achieve its ends. But our time, despite the sway we hold over it, is coming to an end. Kalawif pauses, holds her hands on the table. You ask why this enemy seeks to destroy this time and place, this reality, she says. The intensity of her gaze certainly unnerving you. The enemy knows that the greatest danger to its best laid plans is to be found here. The entity that seeks the destruction of this world. It's a wager from time, past, present, and future. It's determined to remove the threat that it has perceived. A threat that bears the potential to bring about its utter demise. Everywhere. Ooh, yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Whoever that. Let's ally with whoever that threat is. Seer pauses and asks her if she is the threat the enemy is seeking. Confidently answer you receive before you even finish posing the question. No, Sir Crokington, she says. It's you. Bum, bum, bum. Still reeling from Calois' revelation due to the threat that causes the nameless enemy to target his time and place. This time and place for destruction. A wager from existence. You ask her how she came to be. You find yourself suddenly leery of this woman and doubtful of the elaborate tale she has thus far weaved. You are at present unknown to our enemy, she says. You have been discovered seven times. 3 times elsewhere, the last 4 right in this chamber. Need not tell you that all 7 of those discoveries have ended in your death and the certain victory of our foes. So I presume, so all of the foes we've been fighting are not the agents of the true enemy. They're just the agents of the enemy's little puppet in this time and place, the Grand Sentry, and maybe a few other things. If we were to face the actual true enemy at this time, we'd be smushed out in an instant. So we have to make sure they don't know about us. Karlof tells you that while she and her confederation of 7 possess the ability to converse time and reality, their power is beginning to weaken. She fears this will be the last attempt she will be able to make to defeat the Grand Sentry and throw the designs of the nameless enemy into irrecoverable chaos. I'm not here exclusively, she suddenly says, as if exposing an uncomfortable secret. I, as do the rest of my order, exist throughout time. You've encountered me in your past, you may again in your future, and you are here before me now. The same can be said of 1,000 heroes of 1,000 different times, whose fates I watch over, to ensure they are not unjustly altered. Karlof pauses for a moment, your thoughts drift back to your encounter with Owl, the cave on Sargard Island, following your emergence from Ulia's portal that transported you from Swine Island. You clearly recall the encounter. Back of the cave, you find the familiar black pulsing vortex. Black pulsing vortexes, time and again, faithfully bore you to and from the perilous shores of Sargard. You linger for a few minutes before the portal, listening intently to the sounds of the forest outside, eager to hear anything that would suggest your companions are nearby. When it becomes apparent you are alone, you quickly decide that your best course of action is to return to Twinned Keep. After taking one last look around at the gloomy interior of the cave. Yes, it's double gloomy. You step towards the swirling portal. Just like that, then. The voice from behind you, barely above a whisper, startles you, causing your heart to skip a beat. You spin around to confront whoever is at your back, but there is no one there. Here, the voice, this time to your right, is louder, clearer, and instantly recognisable. You turn to find yourself face to face with Owl. The Master Thief regards you with a suspicious, unfriendly gaze. I nearly gave up on you, he says. Your friend, the Sorceress, did give up, but to be fair, she did wait around here for the better part of 2 days. Confused, you ask Owl what he means. He never arrived here with us, he says, still regarding with obvious suspicion. The caster said you were lost, that the attempt to teleport the 3 of us was too bold. We appeared right outside this cave, as he said we would, but you never did. Be gone 5 long days, friend. It's put us in a bit of a rough spot. You continue to recall. Without disclosing much of anything about the 4 grim visions you experienced while being teleported, you craft an account of your trials, starting the exact moment Uyo began to summon her magic, and concluding with your reunion with Owl in the dark hollow at the back of the hidden cave. The Master Thief sighs, and quickly apologizes for what he said previously. There is precious little time as there is, he says. This delay has cost us more than we might be able to afford. That's put me a bit on edge, for it's wrong for me to find fault over something out of your control. The Sorceress might have been able to save us a long trek, but she apparently had matters more urgent elsewhere. We best not waste any more time, though, as we may already be too late. You continue to recall the encounter. Owl tells you that he fears for the safety of the Wabble in Karzan, and he fears that much of what Tomifwa, one of the two sister sorcerers you encountered on Swine Isle, might indeed prove to be true. Unless we are able to get the code contained in the journals back to Karzan. There isn't much point in any of this, he says. The battle we hope to bring to the Grand Century will die in its infancy. With it, the hope of a city long held under a black spell. Recalling Owl's previous words regarding Thane Mazabak, hold your judgment on the Thane. All three bear marks common to a particular calamity from years back. This I have heard, this I choose to believe. Sinister and steeped in mystery who the Mass Thane might be, I do not doubt that he stands closer to our ranks than those of our enemy. Alone too, we are able to pierce together what his purpose on the art is, and has been. We should not concern ourselves with it. We must assume he is combating the long arm of our enemy. There are those in the court who can keep me dutifully apprised of events. You ask the thief what he knows or surmises regarding the Mass Thane, the two Mass Sorceresses, and the connection between Karzan and Sarngard Isle. You continue to recall the encounter. They are quite connected, he says, his shrewd eyes staring fiercely down the length of his crooked nose. Somewhere on the isle is a vast, massive quantity of this. He once again produces several shards of waver bone, holding up the fragmented material pieces for you to see. Began months ago, just as a series of faint whispers passed on to me by members of the Wabble, who had infiltrated the court of the Grand Century. Six brave men hanged at the Citadel gates only days after their own discretion. The whispers led us to the coded journals and to the plans of the Grand Century to acquire an epic load of Wavering Bone.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
From where and for what purpose we did not know. It was plain enough now that his gaze was drawn to Sarngard. Continue to recall the encounter. Owl's eyes narrow, and he suddenly asks you about the wounds you've explored in the bog in the jagged hills on Sarngard Isle. The realization he knows more about your exploits than you previously guessed instinctively causes you to assume a guarded demeanour. The Master Thief seems to sense your uneasiness, but nevertheless repeats his pointed inquiry, asking you specifically about the throne you found in the depths of the ruins. At once, you're able to recall the ornate, high-backed ashwood chair, adorned with iron inlays along its arms and across its sides. You also remember the vision you had in the presence of the throne. A walled city, its thick plumes of black smoke rising over its battlement, looms into view, taking shape amidst a vast and lush forest. Broad arcs of lightning cut across the sky, cry above the city, and with each blinding flash, the towering sinister silhouettes of three figures are plainly visible. You suddenly realise you've been talking aloud, Out of what later hour your recollection of the throw and the vision you had to Al, he seems unaffected by your words, and merely nods when you abruptly end your account. I've seen four others like it, he says, obviously with owners at the throne. Grand wooden thrones tucked away in remote places, each undeniably similar to the others. I can only guess with regard to their purpose and history. From certain neither you or I will find the truth to be to our taste. Owl pauses and turns to glance at the swirling portal that hovers against the back wall of the cave. I too saw the throne in the ruins, he said. Puron sent me into the bog while you were pressed with other matters. I dare not get too close to it, however, for I know all too well the sinister power they harnessed. Instead, I left and returned to the keep, where I found myself run afoul of some of its more dutiful guardians, and wound up in the cell in which you found me. You continue to recall the encounter. Intrigued by Al's tale about the four other wooden thrones you've seen, you ask him where he found them. In a cave in the hills east and north of Gradock, he says. There's one in a hidden chamber in a lair that can be accessed through the sewers in Trithic. There's another for Laedon, and in the ruins of a tower high in the mountains. Owl falls silent and appears to be listening intently to the sounds of the forest that echo through the cave. After nearly a minute's silence, he again speaks. A softly uttered revelation bearing words send a chill the length of your spine. The fourth I discovered only 2 years ago in the Hall of the Grand Century. The very chair upon which the Sorcerer Lord of Cardsan sits is a throne of Alderwood. Your mind reels beneath the weight of Al's sudden profound revelations. You immediately begin to ponder the connection between those whose faces are concealed behind wooden masks, Fae Mazabak, the Grand Sentry of Cardsan, and the two sorcerers you encountered on Shrine Isle, and the five thrones that you and your companions seem to have discovered. It's kindling for some sleepless nights, says Al, as he senses the sinister conclusions you're attempting to draw. I only wish I had enough time to slip into Stone Marsh and see what sort of chair the good Thane affords his backside. For I mind that I still maintain his implication in this is something other than what it seems. Your memory stirred by a recollection of a conversation with Al, you ask Colourith about the thrones. They are vessels by which the traversal of time is possible, she says bluntly. Our enemy's agents make use of them. They contain immense power and must not be used, save by those for whom they were crafted. Anyone found seated upon such a chair is, without question, in league with our nameless foe. There are numerous such thrones to be found on this world. Evidence of other times and places in which our enemy attempted an incursion. So one throne per butt, then. Pretty much. So when they try to get someone, they put a throne there. They lure someone in using thronish whispers. Maybe have some Tazal help out, because they just seem to be able to just come out of nowhere. They get someone, they have them sit on the throne, and then they see what they could do with them. Yes, and so it looks like it hasn't really worked out most of the time. Presumably they tried someone in Sarengard. It may have been recently, it may have been a long, long time ago. Although, can the phones be reused? I do not know. Who knows? The seer might know. Maybe even she doesn't know. Owl unfolds her hands and looks. No, thing is, if the cho- These chairs could just be reused again and again. There'd be no need to have five of them. The CEO unfolds her hands and looks towards the door, where the chain-clad man still stands guard. He nods and returns the gesture. "We still have time," she says, as if the opposite notion had momentarily worried her. "But the enemy's coming for us again. Coming for you, Sir Skorkington. Give me the journals." Her request catches you off guard, and for a moment you pause, hesitant to relinquish the journals you've so long protected. Realising, however, you've likely carried the books to their final destination, you draw them from amongst your belongings and lay them on the table. Caliph quickly opens them and scans their contents. "All right, I finally handed over the journals. After all the many, many, many people that died, so I could get these journals to this place at this time." "I've done this before," she says, looking up as she closes the third journal. "And yet it is as if I've never seen them. I now have what I need. You've done well to make this far with them. Unfortunately, their delivery marks the start of the most perilous stage of your journey." Caliph tells you that a code hidden in each of the journals will allow the opening of a gate to a rift that exists between different dimensions of time and place. In the ancient circles of Arcanium on this world, the rift is known as the Chasm of Time, she says. "It's into this chasm you must go, Sir Crokington. If we are to defeat our enemy, must we just adopt its strategy? Until now, we've used our waning powers over time to erase our own mistakes, to counter the enemy tactics. With what has been provided to us by these journals, we will now move directly, striking a blow the enemy cannot hope to perceive. For it will fall in a time and place where an entity yet unknown to our foe. A successful mission will ensure victory, for it will mean the hand of the enemy has never and will never touch this world. I've already put the journal secrets to use, for the opening of the gate will be up to you." Caliph pauses and looks, a look of anguish passes over a wonderful face. "Before you can speak again, you ask her about the Wavering Bone. The part it must certainly play in all of this lies at the very heart of this matter," she says, "for it is substance unaffected by the passage of time. It is where indeed beyond the bounds of this reality. And so it is sought by our enemy's agents. We have our own allies in place through Sir Grinson. So for the present we need not worry about such things." A steady stream of questions comes to your mind, and you begin to voice them to Seer. You ask her about Thane Mazabak, his connection to Tremithra and Mnalia, the witches of Cardson, the effort to recapture Sarngard Island, Thane Pond's involvement, Ulari's old appearances and allusions to secretive missions, the five platinum stars you've collected, the masked man with the fierce blue eyes, the etched stones, stone and iron constructs, and Luakon. "There will yet be time to make those matters clear to you," she says, "for it is no fault of your own that will remain obscured. The affair is, as you perceive, complex, and few things are what they seem. There is something, however, you must know before we begin this last stage." Caliph tells you that by entering the chasm of time, you were able to deliver a fatal blow to the plans of your nameless enemy, before the enemy has even conceived of the endeavour of erasing the reality in which your world exists. You also learned, however, that some things will be forever changed by your actions. Some large, some imperceptible, and some perhaps near to your heart. If you complete this mission, you'll find some friends and allies will never have known you, and others may become your sworn enemies. Though others still, Sir Crokington, perhaps dear friends who occupy stations in life that are removed that are removed from your, who occupy stations in life that were removed from your own. Still others who will never have existed. You must accept that this will be. There is no other path to victory. The past must be altered. And with its altering, you'll be shifting the course of the future. Her words give you pause as the enormity of the message they convey sinks in. It's difficult to conceive. You must know that it is necessary. A different present from the one you now know, and a future far removed from the dark one, towards which this world now marches, is what must come to pass. Caliph removes her left hand from her left hand from the table, revealing a pair of small platinum coins. Hidden previously beneath the palm. Good. They're there. You immediately recognise the coin to be identical to the 5 platinum star coins you already possess. I told you at our meeting on the hill that you were to return to me when you had all 7 coins, she says. She slides the curious objects across the table to you. You now have all 7, and you are standing before me. I would have to say that, to this point, all has coalesced quite nicely. You must remember, though, that you and I have stood at this very juncture before. 7 times, to be precise. All right, 2 platinum star coins. You ask Karef how you were able to employ the platinum coins. She tells you the final piece required to open the gate is not yet there. You must understand the enormity of the task you're about to undertake, she says, her voice adopting a cautionary tone. My confederates and I no longer possess the power required to intervene in this reality. You must not fail on this, the last and most perilous stage. You may return here through the gate that you will open, but again, I warn you, the reality you find awaiting you when you emerge from the chasm may be vastly different from this one. You ask her what the final stage entails. She glances towards the door, and the chain-clad man standing guard next to it nods. Listen to me carefully, she says. Cullen opens her mouth, but it pauses unnaturally. For a fleeting instant, your head feels like it's swimming. This disorientating sensation quickly fades, leaving no lingering effects in its wake. You ask Karef, are you able to employ the platinum coins? Employ the platinum coins, he shows you. The keys are the keys that will allow you to pass through the gate and enter the chasm of time. You must know the enormity of the task you're about to undertake, she says, her voice adopting a cautionary tone. My confederates and I no longer possess the power required to intervene in this reality. You must not fail in this, the last and most perilous stage. You may return here through the gate that you were open, but again, I warn you, the reality you find awaiting you when you emerge from the chasm may be vastly different from this one. You ask what the final stage entails. She glances towards the door, and the chain-clad man, standing guard next to it, nods. Listen to me carefully, she says. Chasm tells you that when the gate is opened and you pass through the chasm of time, you will be beyond even her reach. At none of the previous junctions have we even opened the gate, she says. The last 2 junctures saw you arrive with the agents of your enemy immediately at your heel. Our last meeting in this chamber never took place. You burst through the door, pursued by your foes and foe in that very corner. I've taken steps to see this time we're not caught completely off our guard. So unclear about much of what's been said, you ask her what you must do upon entering the chasm. The chasm of time is a rift between the vast multitudes of time and places, he said. It is a void of wonder and terror. The 7 coins you possess will lead you to your destination. You need only trust them to guide you without hesitation. Your destination will be somewhere in this world, Sir Grokington, but in the past. The seer glances at the chain-clad man standing near the door, then turns a gaze to you. Where the coins lead you, you will encounter a young boy by the name of Williften Mock. In possession, you're likely to find a book. The book is this one. Camriff holds up one of the journals. In a journal, you discovered hidden beneath the floor in the Five Knots Inn in Merksport. Storied indeed are the histories of these journals, she says, noting you are well's interest. The one which I believe you found in Merksport has perhaps the most tales to tell. It will be in young Willift and Moff's possession. If it is not, you will know where to find it. You must acquire it, Sir Grogan, and you must destroy it. You believe you will now fully understand the purpose of your mission by obtaining and destroying the journal in the past, the very book that presently lies just across the table from where you now sit. You have significantly altered the course of events that led up to this moment. It is Carl's obvious belief and his profound hope that his particular alteration will have the desired effect of preventing the nightmarish finality of a nameless entity, enemy's sinister designs. Suddenly, a dreadful thought dawns on you. Not willing to allow the notion to pass off your mind, you promptly tell the seer, you will not under any circumstances harm the child, even should your position bring the task to ruin. Even at the expense of the mission, she asks. Since she already knows your answer, you nod firmly. The seer reaches down from the table and picks up a small, worn, leather-bound book and hands it to you. It's a worn leather-bound book. View. This small, worn, leather-bound book was given to you by Caliph just before your excursion into the chasm of time. She told you that it may be useful to swap this book with the journal carried by Willif Tomok. The book contains several rather dry treatises on warfare and politics, and a brief and incomplete history of the Tyson monarchy. You do well to keep this with you and exchange it for the journal. Harming the child is not foreseen, so you need not fret over it. You must destroy the journal, Sir Grogginton. On this point, there can be no compromise. You tell Tariff that you understand the task that looms before you, and you're ready to enter the gate and embark on the last stage of your mission. She immediately glances at the chain-clad man standing guard at the door. First time since you entered the door, to enter the chamber, dressed by name. What is it? Red Aura? A silent companion turns from the door and looks at her, but says nothing. They're coming, she says, rising from the table, retreating to the far corner of the room sooner than I anticipated. But so it must be, Sir Grokington. For without what is about to happen, none of what we hope will come to pass. Face the door. You draw yourself into defensive stance and square yourself with the door. The seer's silent, chain-clad companion steps away from the door and retreats to her side. At that precise moment, you hear the roar of fire from the passage outside, followed by Olenwek's blood-chilling scream. Another loss for the rabble. And the sound of heavy footfalls fluttering in the direction of the door. Wait, could you just bug it off? I guess it hasn't really been that long. The sound of heavy footfalls thudding in the direction of the door. I guess he was kind of hoping I'd be able to do whatever it was that I do here and then go right back to helping the rabble. Yeah, maybe that's what he assumed. I kind of assumed that he would just go, you'd drop me off, then go back to the rabble to make whatever advantages they can out of the disbanding of the Ghost Patrol. And maybe that is what happened. And maybe the entire rabble has just now been torn apart and they've been doing a fighting retreat back to this door. Because they know, they're not sure what I'm doing. They have no idea. But they know I'm their last best hope. And if they're all going, they're going to die. They're going to sell their lives dearly to buy me as many moments as I need to do whatever it is I'm going to do. Yeah. That might be it for the Wabble. All dead now. Well, all the Wabble in Cardson, at least. There's dribbles and drabbles of it scattered around, but without Omorek, they, as a organization with any hope of achieving anything, they're done. And thus, this is just the start of the darkness of this timeline. This timeline that I cannot permit to continue. And not just because of the whole destruction of everything thing, because it's getting really bad. Without warning, a second reverberating roar fills the passage outside. The door suddenly explodes in a ball of fire, showering you with jagged shards of wood and twisted iron fragments. As the smoke clears, your heart sinks. Stepping through the door, its heavy footfall sending tremors through the floor beneath your feet, is a massive stone and iron construct. You will clearly recall your numerous encounters with these fearsome beings of both Sarngard and Shrine Isle. The towering construct stomps in your direction, raising its massive energy-entwined fists as it prepares to deal you a decisive blow. You leap forward and boldly engage the behemoth. Massive construct? Right. It's going to be a massive deconstructed. The towering construct smashes you with its energy-entwined fists. And I smash at it too. Smashing's all round. The massive construct shudders as its metal fists suddenly emit a fierce golden glow. You sense the construct is slowly increasing its strength. Okay, we better smash it before it gets too strong. It is slain. 41 XP. The massive stone and iron construct collapses into a smashed heap at your feet. Arcs of golden energy leap across the shattered torso of the strange being for several moments, the wake of his demise, before abruptly vanishing. Before you can turn to discover the whereabouts of Kalarith and her chain-clad companion, two more constructs emerge from the smoke-filled doorway. Without a second thought, you move to your left and assume a defensive stance, prepared to engage the first of the lumbering giants. Begin fighting a massive construct. Just going to slash my way through it. Yes, this is makes it so stronger. I go into a battle rage. Come on! I'm so close to the chasm of time! Stop getting in my way! Slain. 41 XP. Leaping over the heap of shattered stone, or springing over it, and twisted iron at your feet, you dump on the head of the second construct in a frenzied assault. Massive construct. I keep whacking at its head. It keeps trying to make itself stronger. That's not enough because I keep whacking its head. I whack its head very strongly. Bash, 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 bash its head. It is slain. 41 XP. You step back from the shattered remains of the destroyed construct, just as broad arcs of fire erupt out of the smoke-filled doorway. The deadly bolt of flame surges across the chamber towards you. Alright, I've got four options. Shadow magic, elementalism, fortification, or just try to dodge it. As a user of these, I shall be going to random.org. Number 1 to 4. Number 1, shadow magic. It succeeded. 68 XP to shadow magic. You channel your power of shadow magic. 1,000 shrill whispers pass through your mind as a web of gloom stretches across the chamber in front of you. The bolt of fire strikes your shadowy barrier and is promptly consumed. The shadows swiftly retreat to the corners of the room, leaving only a thin trail of grey smoke in their wake. Having survived the deadly attack unscathed, you prepare to move towards the door, eager to prevent the possibility of a second blast. You covered less than 5 yards when you suddenly freeze, emerging from the smoke-filled doorway. its broad fists entwined with golden tines, crackling tines of golden energy. It's the massive stone and iron construct. Behind the towering being, you make out the silhouette of yet another of its kin. The fearsome behemoth stomps across the chamber towards you, its fist ways to deal you a deadly blow. Like all the foes I've been fighting, these are free pluses, for now at least. They do make themselves stronger, like it did just now, and slain. 41 XP. You step around the heap of shattered stone and twisted iron, and boldly hold your ground against the swift advance of the second construct. This time I jump on one of its fists, because it can't punch me with that fist if I'm already on it. Yeah, clever, eh? Keep going, bashy, bashy, bashy. It is slain. 41 XP. The mighty being of stone and iron collapses into a smashed heap at your feet. Arcs of golden energy leap across the torso of the strange being for several moments in the wake of its demise, before abruptly vanishing. Your eyes turn to the doorway, where your gaze falls upon a small, tender, slender, and unmistakably feminine silhouette emerging from the smoke. For an instant, your heart leaps as you assume the approaching figure is that of Colorith. Your moment of fleeting hope swiftly turns into dismay as you behold the robed, staff-wielding figure steps into view. Standing at the base, edge of the base, dense smoke fills the whole doorway. Her gaunt form framed by a billowing whirl of vapour at her back is the mass sorceress Humalaya. Her eyes narrow as she fixes her chilling gaze upon you. She taps the butt of her staff against the door. For in an instant, the lengthy weapon is ablaze with crimson flames. Time. Time has won out. She hisses, stepping forward, massively brandishing her fire-weave staff. You've long been deserving of the fate my sister so joyously dealt your pitiful friend. With unbridled hatred welling up from the pit of your soul, you spring at yourself at the master sorceress, springing so fast I'm almost decapitate her with it. Prepared to fight her to the finish. This is Humalaya, and it is time for her to die. Begin combat. Humalaya strikes at you with her flaming staff. Keep going. I go into a rage. This is for all the people you've killed. This is so many. All the tyranny you enable, and also so I can survive and, you know, save the universe. You're engulfed by the flames of enemy's attack for 22 damage, and again for 28 damage, because as we all know about these people, they like fire. She is slain, although considering that she's a witch of Cardson, I'm not sure if it will stick. 521 XP. You step back from Humalaya's withering corpse and turn to look for Colorith. There is no sign of the seer in the smoke-filled chamber, but you immediately spot her silent companion, Veldor, making his way towards you. "We must go now," he says, his gentle, almost feminine voice the furthest from what you had expected. "There's no time left. Open the gate. You can will it open. I will come with you." The sudden, fear-inspiring sound of heavy footfalls approaching along the cat passage outside the chamber adds an even deeper sense of urgency to Varador's directive. Without knowing quite what you're doing, but feeling as if you're being guided by an unseen force, you take hold of the 7 platinum coins and cut them into, I guess, your entire arms. Valador steps closer to you, but suddenly pauses unnaturally mid-step. For a fleeting instant, your head feels like it's swimming, disorientating sensation fades quickly as the whale rose, leaving no lingering effects in its wake. "We must go now," says Falador, his gentle, almost feminine voice, the fervent from what you'd expected. "There's no time left. Open the gate. You can will it open. I will come with you." The sudden, fear-inspiring sound of heavy footfalls approaching along the passage outside the chamber adds an even deeper sense of urgency to Valavon's directive. Without knowing quite what you're doing, almost feeling as being guided by an unseen force, you take hold of the 7 platinum coins and cup them in your arms. Your eyes widen as a wide, pulsing black vortex takes form in front of you. You glance at Valador, and he nods, motioning for you to enter the portal. Without further hesitation, you step forward and into the summoned gate. You immediately find yourself tumbling through a lightless void. As you fall into the void, you struggle to gain control of your motion in an effort to stop from wildly spinning in all directions. After a lengthy struggle, you manage to steady yourself. Almost immediately, you catch sight of Valador, plummeting down from above. His arms outstretched as if he believes it will somehow slow his descent. Before he can attempt to communicate with your newfound companion, you once again begin to spin and flip haphazardly. You gain control of your motion and manage to turn over so that your gaze is focused upward in an attempt to spot Valador. Your heart skips a beat and a deep sense of dread washes over you as your eyes settle upon an unwelcome sight. Tumbling through the void above you, in the space occupied by Valador only moments ago, is the masked sorceress Tomifra. From above the whim of the blackened wooden mask that covers her face, is the fierce green eyes ablaze with hatred. It's at that moment you realise that a fight to the death with the last living witch of Cardassian is in your immediate destiny. And that finishes this scenario with 3,072 experience to general and 512 experience to all skills and powers. That also finishes part 3 of Proving Ground 6, part 3, The City of the Sorcerer Lord. And the next up is part 4, The Elder Throne. What is and what will be may not be what was. This first part is called The Chasm of Time, and there's quite a bit left to go. And let me just check, what's my percentage now? Alright, we're still at 93%. Putting me in the third order of adventures, but with all this time travel stuff going on, maybe that could be fixed. Okay, yes, that can be fixed. That's the only reason I took the stupid option. But anyway, next time, we will be going into the chasm of time. And who knows what will be changed when we've gone through it. But until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.